Welcome to Meditation and Aliens with Doro and Matt, a webcast that explores everything we currently know about the truth about aliens, human history, reality, consciousness, and the role meditation can do to help us understand all these things, and how we might all work together to build the best world possible for all beings, human or non-human alike. Meditation and Aliens is hosted by me, Matt Reddy. I'm an amateur ufologist. I have a degree in philosophy. I'm the creator of HiveOne.net. I'm also an elected public hospital commissioner in Jefferson County, Washington. Each week, I am joined by Doro Kiley, longtime meditator, a meditation teacher, and an experiencer with many stories, and life coach extraordinaire. You can find more about Doro at her website, creationcoach.com. Now, on to the show. And we're back. How you doing, Doro?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to another one.
How's your week been?
It's been busy. I've been, you know, trying to catch up with a lot of stuff, just personal stuff mostly, but I'm also trying to figure out sound systems for my my setup here. And yeah, just staying busy, but yeah, I need to calm down a little bit. Oh, there's a great quote that I came up with that I found actually by a wonderful woman. She's a Buddhist nun, and she said, "There's nothing worse than to have a running leakage of spirit consciousness." And I thought that just captures everything. You know, everybody glued to their flat screens, just scrolling. And that's sort of what I envisioned as her running leakage of spirit consciousness. So yeah, I'm keeping that in mind.
And did you say you started a new podcast?
I did. And this one is called In Quest. It's primarily going to be interviewing, and I've just started. I haven't even posted my first one yet. I've already done one, but I haven't. I'm going to post on a regular basis, hopefully, after I get three or four up. So that is going to be me interviewing spiritual / meditation teachers. And, you know, bringing to the show anything, topping it off with three basic questions that they want to focus on. So it's the first one turned out great, and I look forward to some more. So it's called the In Quest podcast.
Right.
Thanks.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, we'll see. How's your week been, Matt?
Good. One thing that happened for me this week is Daniel Sheehan's New Paradigm Institute had their first class for the course they're offering in, I think they're calling it Extraterrestrial Studies. And yeah, so I signed up for their first course. He's teaching the first two courses, which each is like four classes over one class a week for 4 weeks. And then Richard Dolan is teaching the second two courses with the same format. And it's, so we had the first class yesterday. I think there was over 100 people, I think, in the live class. But he said something like thousands will be watching the video. So I don't know if they have thousands already set up for this first course.
Oh boy.
But it was fascinating.
Is he talking about thousands within the class who's signed up, or is this going to be offered on YouTube or something?
No, I think this is only if you pay to take the course, because this is a college credit through Ubiquity University. It's part of building up to get a master's or a PhD in extraterrestrial studies. And it's the first of its kind. Yeah, I took all sorts of notes because I was like, you know, just like so much information. And they went over the whole outline of the of his history and what the course is going to cover. And
talking about Daniel Sheehan's history.
Well, yeah, it was first he gave his background, and then he started to cover what the course is going to cover, which is the entire, basically the history of everything related to ufology the last since like 1933. He said they're not going to go to ancient times. That's going to be a separate whole course, but this is going to focus on the modern era, from 1933 to present day, involving everything that's happened with UFO sightings, abductions, the cover-ups, Project Blue Book, Project Grudge, the Condon Report, Majestic 12, remote viewing. I mean, I was like, I was like, are you going to talk about telepathy and remote viewing? And yep, yeah, absolutely. He went to,
Oh, good. Yes.
so many abduction stories have telepathy in them.
Yeah.
And yeah, and remote viewing has been studied. He talked all about the Stanford, doing this incredible study on remote viewing, the Stanford Research Institute. He told a horrible, oh man, a horrible story I had never heard before, about the government, or maybe it was the Stanford. No, I think it was a government program because they used nuclear submarines in order to test to see if telepathy was possible. They were trying to use telepathy or remote viewing as a means of communication with submarines. And so they did a horrible test with a baby mother rabbit and her babies. Sorry, a mother rabbit and her babies. And
Yeah.
she put the one of her each of her babies onto nuclear submarines, sent one of the submarines under like the Arctic ice, and had the mother like back at, military headquarters in Washington. And then they killed the baby, and they had all these monitors set on the mother to just measure every single like physical reaction she had at the exact moment of the baby's death, because they had it timed. They knew exactly when they were
Oh
going to kill the
my
baby rabbit.
God. Oh, that's
And
awful.
yeah, but not only did they get a physical reaction, I mean, the mother went crazy, like just like started jumping all right. It was like, so it was
She knew.
absolutely proof of a remote telepathic connection between a mother rabbit and the baby bunny.
Yeah.
And that was just one piece that he said that, that they, he just, so he talked a little bit about remote viewing. Totally. He said, mentioned Hal Puthoff, who was a big, remote viewing person. Lou Elizondo, we know, has a history with remote viewing, even though he won't talk about it. And, anyway, so I was worried he was going to stay away from telepathy and remote viewing, because that's like one of the most interesting areas. But nope, it's going to be part
Good.
of this whole thing. We're going to be studying. He gave us books to read.
Is he going to give you training in how to do it?
No, it's this is more, he wants people there to become experts in all the facts, because he's trying to basically train an army of people that are well educated in the truth about humanity's relationship with these non-human intelligences. Because he's like, we have to figure out what our policies are going to be. How are we going to interact with these groups? And we need people, we're going to need new people to run for Congress, to, because we're going to have to get rid of so many, because they're so corrupt and they're uneducated people. We need a whole people with a whole new framework of how to think about where what humanity's place in the cosmos is.
I'm so glad that they're working on that answer because, yeah, that's a big one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's the one of the let me see. Yeah, I think the third course is all about the philosophical and metaphysical implications of this whole thing. First one is all about history. Oh, but the next one is, oh, the second course is all about every theory, like every theory of what is the nature of NHI, whether they're, and he says there's like five, named five to six major theories. And let me see. ETs is one. Extra dimensional or interdimensional is one. Extra temporal, some sort of time travelers, perhaps us from the future, is the third. A breakaway civilization is the fourth. Something like the Atlanteans or a lost human civilization. The fifth is an AI from another star system, or just an AI of some sort, the Borg, an AI controlling all this. He named a six, which was Carl Jung's theory of this NHI is an unconscious projection of our inner world into material reality. I haven't heard
Wow.
that one.
Makes sense. Yeah, that would be very Carl Jung. That makes sense to me actually. You know,
Yeah, I
they
thought it
all
would.
make sense to me. Maybe it's all of the above.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, and the seventh is ultra secret U.S. military tech, which is really absurd when you see how far back in time these things have gone. But
Yeah.
it he even mentioned, Stephen Greer, who says most of the sightings we see are, U.S. military secret craft. So I mean, there is whether or not they got it from ETs of some sort.
I just was watching a YouTube video. I think it was Natural History or some major channel that are they're putting it out there as, all of these UFOs are a threat. And I'm concerned about that. I mean, if a pilot runs into one, yeah, that's a problem, but they're kind of coloring it as, a real threat, and we're going to have to figure out how to manage this. And I don't know. That's
What
going in
is
the wrong direction.
your feeling? I mean, what do you think is going on with the NHIs, the non-human intelligence? Do you think they're a threat? Do you think they're in more than one group?
I think there's, yes, definitely, I would say more than one group. I think that there is a species that there's multiple species that are specializing in different things. And, each species has its own sort of piece of the puzzle playing here. I think some are more genetically, focused. Some are more, conscious focused, some are dream focused. So I don't know. That's kind of my feeling, is that, and if we are scared and frightened, then there's going to be those that are feeding off of that. So I think what we need to do is decide not what to do or what to say, but how we can be, how we can manage our energy. We have to choose our energy intentionally and consciously. If we fall into fear, we're just going to be catering to that level of entity that I think is here. And if we rise higher than that and, meditate, we can gain some assistance, I think, from higher dimensions. So that's the way I break it down. How about you?
I've been watching all the Farsight remote viewing videos as my new like fascinating narrative to explore. And the I mean I definitely believe these UFOs, these flying saucers that operate in a way that beyond the physics and technology that mainstream humanity is aware of. I definitely believe these things are real, and they've been around Earth a long time. So there's something that's been going on a long time
Yeah.
on Earth. And these non-humans, this high technology group or groups, they have to, I mean, best case scenario is they have been hands off and just watching humanity for thousands of years. But it seems more likely, since there's so many stories of contact with them, and there is seems to be a lot of evidence they've been heavily involved at every step of the way with humans and human governments and wars. It seems like, I mean, as an activist, I've believed and sensed that the US democracy and governments have been controlled by corporations. I've always just put it to human corporations are at the top, and money is at the top, and these closed boys' clubs are controlling the world secretly and buying off politicians and lobbying. But now it seems, especially because of the how long this has been going, how coordinated the effort has been going on for decades and decades and decades, way longer than individual humans can sort of plan out. It just makes more sense that it is one of these NHI civilizations is at the top of the chain of the corruption and control of human corporations and institutions and manipulating things.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Yeah. So
But
that's.
there's also the other influence that's coming in, which is much more spiritual, psychic, kind of ready to help anybody who's reaching,
Yeah.
It's Does they talk about that? That there's and these I think are more interdimensional. I don't know that they are. They may use Ebens or whatever they call grays to do their in-between work, but I think the real higher consciousness ones are interdimensional. That's my feeling.
Well, I think Farsight and Courtney Brown, they simplify it to, they just say there are malevolent ETs and there are good ETs. And Farsight claims to communicate with the and work with the benevolent ones, and they are interested in helping, humanity be free and be prosperous. But they also indicate when they remote view and talk to these ETs and ask them about their civilization, it doesn't look to me like their civilizations. I don't get the impression that they're utopian, perfect civilizations. But they do seem in favor of humanity not being dominated and enslaved and abused by the malevolent ETs, which they say has been going on a long time. And so it's been, that's the picture I'm getting now is that, I mean, just like with humanity, if you just look at all humans, some humans are enlightened. Some humans are, spiritually, they are trying to find a path for happiness for themselves and happiness for the world and equality, and they don't want anyone or any being to suffer or be dominated. I mean, that spirit, I think, is of course alive in non-human civilizations as it is in humans. Even if the bad ETs, as Farsight says, maybe they're mostly reptilian or these Orions, these sort of like space Nazis that they, but it's just because one civilization is dominated by a culture or a political system that is really gross, it doesn't mean that that whole species is gross. There's every species, every group is going to have some percentage that is really trying to be good and trying to find a path in life that is beautiful and caring and wants to live in a path of love of other species and
And I
figure that
love
out.
what Courtney Brown, I guess it was, that sort of outlined this rationale for what you're saying is that you can't have a small group of disconnected, powerful people making decisions for all of us. So yeah, totally. Yeah, what was recommended? What should people do to free themselves from this slavery, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, well, we didn't really get to that in the course yesterday. He just said this is, we got to change our thinking. We have to shift our whole worldview of we need to shift our worldview completely to we are not alone, and to understand we are probably not the apex civilization. We are probably in the lower 1% of powerful civilizations in our own galaxy, in our own solar system. And we have to figure out how to have a relationship with these non-human civilizations. We need to see if there's any treaties that are in place. And if there are, we need to renegotiate them out in the open. And and it kind of overlaps with it's gonna for me it overlaps with Courtney Brown, because he talks in a similar vein, but he talks much more explicitly that there are agreements, there are treaties, and he says they're invalid. They were made in secret, and therefore they do not represent humanity. You can't make a secret agreement that represents people. Yeah, we need to. He says the problem is that the good ETs, they are powerful, but if apparently there is an agreement. There's like a cold war going on between the good ETs and the malevolent ETs that dominate Earth and are behind the scenes on Earth. And I think part of that agreement is that they won't reveal themselves to humanity. And
Ever?
if the well, that's what the malevolent ETs prefer. But or maybe it's not even an agreement. It's just sort of the status. If the good ETs revealed themselves, then it would be considered, it would just escalate to a hot war between the malevolent and the good, and they're not interested in that. It's sort of like we're the babies in the field between Russia and the US, except it's two massively powerful NHIs. And so it's kind of, and so they're like, he says that the friendlier ETs, if they revealed themselves, like they just had a ship appear, then the, well, what happens when they do appear is the humans shoot them down. That's what the crash retrieval program is. And they don't fire back because then they would seem hostile, and it would, because the malevolent ETs want humanity to see the good ETs as invaders. And they want us to be, you know, feel like we have to fight them. And so if so, the good ETs don't ever fire back. They just have to let themselves get shot down when that happens.
Wow.
And if they revealed
them, in fact, we're trying to start a war with them or something, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think that's, I think the malevolent ETs, war is, they are totally good with war. They want war to happen. They want massive human war. They'd probably be okay with significant nuclear war.
These are the bad guys, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're like fine, because war makes it easier to control humanity. Sure. You know, the more violence in war, the more we're in our reptilian brain and our live in fear. And it's easier to control and implement authoritarian decisions and just channel money wherever you want, you know. And when we're at war with Iraq or Ukraine, or things are just heating up, or right after 9/11, it's so easy to just like send hundreds of billions of dollars to whatever, you know, the CIA and the military industrial complex wants, and to go into whatever secret parts and secret programs and groups of humans, and probably to the NHIs.
Yeah. Oh, create a problem and present the solution. That's that's the old name of the game, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy. So how long was the class? About an hour?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
Yeah. And I mean, there was some, let me just share a couple stories I got from it. So first of all, President Carter was in 1976. When he was elected, he had seen a UFO. So he knew something was up. So he demanded a briefing from the CIA to explain what was going on with UFOs. The head of the CIA was George H.W. Bush. And he refused to tell Carter anything. So Carter decided to ask the science and technology part of the House of Representatives to work with the Library of Congress to do an investigation and to get Carter all the info they could about UFOs. And they hired Daniel Sheehan at that time, who was working for the Jesuits as a lawyer, helping them draft public policy. So that is when Daniel Sheehan, as a lawyer, first got engaged in this topic big time. That was by President Carter in 1976. So he's been involved for a long time.
Mm.
He then got access to all the classified materials from Project Blue Book. And even though Project Blue Book was a massive cover-up, they did have access to a mass amount of materials because they were given all the cases and all the documents. And so Daniel Sheehan got to see the photographs of a crash retrieval flying saucer. And he even saw on the dome of one of these flying saucers writing symbols that he had never seen before, and he wrote them down. Then he went through, because he was like, I wonder what these symbols are. Is anyone going to recognize these as any sort of human language? So he took the symbols to the Vatican, because he was in the Jesuit order and connected there. He brought them to a priest or a bishop that he knew at the Vatican and explained the whole thing and showed the symbols to him, just to ask, have you ever seen these before? Do these look like anything? And the priest reached into his drawer and pulled out a photograph of a flying saucer.
Oh my.
Yeah. And this photograph had been given to the priest by a series of hands. It was actually given to the priest by the priest's sister, who got it from her husband, who got it from a pilot who took it, and it was over the Seattle area. And the pilot and the guy he gave it to, they didn't want to show it themselves because it would, you know, it has a way of ruining your career if you talk about UFOs.
How long ago was this? Did you remember?
This was this is 1976 that Carter got Daniel Sheehan involved.
And the Pope, what was
it? The Vatican. It must have been shortly after that he had this interaction with the Vatican. So, I mean, that was one story. And then I'll just run through this briefly. So then there's a guy named Mac, who who's a very Dr. Mack. He was from Harvard. I don't know his, I can't know what his first name is. He did a bunch of interviews of abductees, and because he just found these stories fascinating, and they used not hypnosis, but holotropic breathing or something to help people relax and remember their abduction stories. But so this guy, Dr. Mack at Harvard, he did all this research, interviewing all these people that had alien experiences, compiled a paper and tried to get it published, I think in the New England Journal of Medicine. They refused to publish it. So Dr. Mack just publishes it on his own as a book. And I've got to read this book. But then the Harvard, all the faculty at Harvard tried to throw Dr. Mack, and they brought him up on charges in Harvard for talking about UFOs and aliens.
How can they do that?
Yeah. Well, so then Dr. Mack hired Daniel Sheehan to come and defend him in front of the Harvard board. And Sheehan, and then this is crazy. Sheehan, apparently they knew one of the Rockefellers, and the Rockefeller agreed to fund a series of grand rounds classes at Harvard for all the Harvard faculty to show the evidence that non-human intelligence exists and that these UFOs exist and some of these crashes are real. And the Harvard faculty went crazy when he suggested that, and they dropped the whole suit, and they were like, we have no interest.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, so that's another time that Daniel Sheehan, that's how Daniel got massively connected to the ufology community and people like Stanton Friedman and all sort. He named a bunch of names that I don't even know. So that was one of, and now he's, you know, he's the lawyer for Lou Elizondo.
So I wonder, does Harvard still have a problem with believing in UFOs?
Well, you know, Avi Loeb is at Harvard right now, and he's doing the Galileo project, and they did criticize him, but they are letting him proceed. But it seems Harvard, you know, seems to be one of the secret society, you know, power beds, you know, all the way through history, which it just makes sense. You know, if there's going to be a secret group of humans controlling the world, you're going to use certain schools, certain institutions to be your homes. And it, you know, it looks like all the way back to the founding of this country, Harvard has been one of them. But oh man, the guy was just saying story after story. Let me see.
How many
Yeah, he
classes
mentioned.
altogether? Sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
No, what were you saying?
How many classes are there in this course? How
There's
many?
four. This one is going to have four classes, and but there's four courses total that they have, that you each one you have to pay for. And you know, the thing is, and I think after you finish all four courses, then you have the opportunity, I think, to write a master's thesis, or I guess go for a doctorate, and they can, you know, and if you can write a compelling, you know, 30-page master's thesis that adds something research, you know, you can pick any sort of topic to go into and try to develop new knowledge and new information and new research. You know, could get a master's
So,
degree in extraterrestrial studies and then.
can you imagine? So, as you're studying, I'm sure you've got your ears open for some topic or sideline that you could develop as a thesis, right?
Oh yeah, I'm just like, and you know, he was like, I mean, it could be as simple as just picking any of these major events and just digging deeper into it and really finding out more. I mean, I like, yeah, I've got ideas. I mean, Majestic 12, he mentioned how it was created by Truman to help hide what's been going on. So the whole history of that, the, you know, who's been murdered over the years, possibly assassinations. I don't think he mentioned that specifically, but it's definitely an area that it seems that this secret keeper group was involved with the JFK and RFK assassination. There's definitely
Oh
a
my
threat there.
goodness. Can you imagine doing a thesis on the MJ-12? You're kind of putting yourself in the firing line there.
Yeah. But I mean that also just I'm more interested in the telepathy remote viewing fringe. I mean, that's why we have this show, because I mean, he didn't talk about it. He did talk about, you know, we're going to get into psychological, philosophical implications, but what could be more psychologically impactful than the revelation telepathy is real and your own mind could be potentially snooped on.
Could be an open book, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what would be more psychologically terrifying to people than that? That's like, I think it's
Yeah.
people can't even that's why they can't even really think about it.
That's interesting. I would
Yeah.
want if we did a survey on 1,000 people and asked them on a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being totally paranoid, couldn't handle it, and the 10 would be that would be fine, they can probe my brain anytime, I don't care. Where would you fall between 1 and 10?
Oh, whether they can probe my brain anytime?
Yeah.
I don't, I don't give permission to go into my mind at all.
Yeah. And
I
I think that's a good point to make is that, they can probably do it if you're not setting up some kind of a bubble or protection or saying just don't. I mean, I think that would be important. I don't know. What do you think?
Think there might be a law against it. I think, I think these alien civilizations are a law-based group. They're guided by treaties and laws. And I get the sense, even with a lot of these abduction stories, you hear if you clearly say no, then they have to not take you. I think that their trick is they can get people to say yes, the same way, sometimes it might be a tricky, they make it seem like you don't have a choice. Like maybe they threaten you verbally, but I think they can't actually physically take you against your will if you consent because, you believed one of their threats. And their threat could be like, not like we're gonna hurt you if you don't go, but you're gonna die if you don't go because you need us to cure you. Or they could just lie to you about something. It's manipulation, gaslighting. There's no law against lying and gaslighting.
Oh, that's
I don't think there's a law against that, but I think there's a law against actual violation of people's consent.
yeah.
And so I think the same thing with your brain. I think my theory is that's why the Lord's Prayer in the Catholic Church says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. It's like it's a way to every day make people say, okay, if someone did violate my brain, I forgive them. So they're like immediately absolving all trespassing
Oh,
that any
dang.
NHI is doing.
That's an easy pass. Yeah. Oh,
It's
dear.
like, they're like, they can defend that. This is the way legalistic bureaucrats are. They need legal defenses. And so it's like,
Yeah.
and what if, like, they're named, they're somehow they're, when you invite Jesus in, maybe Jesus is the name of the NHI telepathic entity in some way. And so it's like they've invited Jesus in. I mean, it's like
Yeah.
you're inviting it in.
I think that this whole idea of law and they can lie and everything and cheat, but they can't break the law. I think that probably would be more prevalent on the lower sort of reptilian levels. I think higher consciousness is more geared toward ethics and morality and the that they almost don't need written law, that they actually live by more ethical behavior. That's my sense.
Well, I mean, different groups might have different laws. So some of the more enlightened ones might have laws against deception and lying. So they, but it, yeah, I,
This is going to be good. I'm going to enjoy following you taking this class. This is bringing up some good stuff.
yeah. Plus, I'm excited to sort of connect with this whole community of people that are studying this, and could draw from that possibly for people to be involved here or into the Equal Voice vortex that I'm building.
Yeah, so we want to for this podcast perhaps start bringing in some people to interview. Is that part of the plan
Well,
for
as
a few
we
weeks?
mentioned last week, trying to get Yeme, one of their remote viewers, to come on the show. And I think I'm gonna, she said she was available next week. So I'll like see if we can get her on to have our first interview
All right.
discussion. next week with a remote viewer.
Maybe we'll make that a thing. Wouldn't that be fun to have remote viewers on and do a little session once in a while?
Speaking of Farsight Institute, they released a video on YouTube, their Farsight March update. And this one is pretty, I mean, they're really sticking their neck out with this one. They're
Uh-oh.
saying they did a remote viewing to try to see, because they're like, it looks like the Biden and Trump campaigns look so weak, and they're incredibly bad candidates, and they and Courtney Brown was just fascinated by how aggressive the attacks have been on RFK Jr. And he was just like fascinated. It looked like the mainstream media was like re-editing his clips to they're just like pulling out all the stops to try to slow him down. And so they did a remote viewing to take a look at who were the biggest, most strong opposition forces trying to stop RFK Jr. And he says that they uncovered a serious assassination plot.
Oh my
And
gosh.
yeah,
I'm
he
here.
says that. So they're releasing in 2 weeks the details of their remote viewing sessions. He says that he believes that by releasing this info, it will prevent this assassination attempt. But they're going to release all this the remote viewing info on it, and it's really disturbing. But we'll and he says they did it before. They did this in 1997. They did a remote viewing that saw a nuclear. Someone who's going to take a suitcase nuclear bomb into New York City, and they released their Farsight remote viewing on it. And then if you look back, and you'll there is evidence now looking back of two, I think, Lithuanian or Ukrainian guys trying to smuggle in nuclear suitcase bombs into Miami, who got caught like shortly after that.
I mean, the military uses remote viewers, right? I mean, they it's a real thing, and so that would make sense that, if something legitimate comes up through a remote viewing, that they would try and stop it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if the, if there is a part of the military and CIA that is working on the side of good, it seems it seems fractured. It seems part of the intelligence community is on the side of like Lou Elizondo, David Grush, Christopher Mellon, and part is just on the side of Lockheed Martin and Adient. And actually, I have a short clip to play
Oh, good.
of the latest news. Sort of along these lines. See
Yeah, I am
here.
concerned about RFK. He's had break-ins, and yet he can't get any bodyguards or coverage like the other candidates.
Yeah, well, that's what Courtney Brown says. It's like it's suspicious they're not allowing him CIA protection, or it's not CIA, Secret Service protection. They're just leaving it wide open. Yeah. Okay. So here's a. This clip is from Post Disclosure World. This guy has been covering disclosure forever, and I really like him. And here he's talking about how it's come out that Travis Taylor, who is connected with Skinwalker Ranch, was part of the people blocking the part of the UAP Disclosure Act. But there's some interesting details here that comes out. So I'll just play the
What's his
clip.
name again, this guy?
His site is called Post Disclosure World. I don't know what his actual name is. His YouTube channel is Post Disclosure World. All right, here we go.
Now, on December 3rd, Liberation Times covered this story that Sheehan was discussing just now in an article titled "Daniel Sheehan exposes five powerful Republicans blocking UFO Disclosure Act as the clock ticks down." And I'm going to share two pertinent citations from Christopher Sharp's article. Asked to specifically name the entities pressuring Representatives Turner and Rogers, Sheehan pinpointed Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Radiance Technologies and the CIA's Directorate of Operations, run by David Marlowe, its current deputy director. While the Liberation Times has been unable to further substantiate the involvement of these organizations, Sheehan states, the two chairpersons have been gotten to by the private aerospace industry and by the CIA. Who knows what positive offers they've been made for additional campaign contributions or what kind of threats have been made to them. The CIA's covert operations people are capable of delivering. Here's another citation. Sources indicate to Liberation Times that the CIA's Office of Global Access, OGA, works closely with the Directorate of Operations in conducting retrieval missions involving crashed or landed crafts of non-human origin. Sheehan added, the operations directorate is the dog that wags the tail in the CIA. According to Sheehan, the CIA is responsible for dispersing non-human materials to aerospace companies, and he says Radiance Technologies is one of its newest customers. Quote, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and now Radiance Technologies are given particular discrete aspects of the technology to try to figure it out. Sheehan said that the three contractors could potentially be subject to lawsuits due to the alleged arrangements with the CIA, commenting, quote, it makes those particular companies subject to massive antitrust lawsuits by other companies that are trying to be honest and trying to compete against them. So with regards to the two excerpts I just shared with you, bear in mind that scientist Travis Taylor works for Radiance Technology. So
I'm going to pause it there. I just wanted to.
Oh dear. I mean, this is big. It's just everywhere now. The FDA, all this corporate capture is a we're completely off track as a world.
Yeah, it's like corporate capture, but it's way more disturbing to me to if the corporate capture ends at aliens. It's just like, and it's, I mean, even if it ends at some group some small group of sort of small-minded aliens. It's just that's way more disturbing than it just ending with a bunch of rich guys, you know, rich selfish humans.
Yeah. Yes, but I do feel that we are being tested. It's like if we don't stand up to declare our own sovereignty, they're just. My deep feeling is that we're being tested. You know, how much are they going to want to control us, and are we going to let them control us? I don't know that this is supposed to come down to a big war or a battle. I think it's just how much can we let go of fear, because that's their driving tool, that's their method. You know, controlling everything through fear and threat and how do you overcome the fear of being threatened?
Yeah.
Big one.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this to you when we spoke earlier this week. There is if Farsight's remote viewing of the way alien species are outside of our solar system, all the ones out in the galaxy, it sounds like they're just a big complicated network of basically corporations, and some might be structured in a more enlightened way than others, and some are more just authoritarian. Because they have this they have on their site, they have a project called the Asani Resistance Movement or something. It's Asani Resistance Movement, where they had heard there is a group of aliens that is organized and trying to in favor of freedom for all beings. And they're resisting some of the authoritarian aspects of some of the different groups out there. And so they tried to do this remote viewing communication with people involved with this and leaders in the Asani movement. And they got a variety of very interesting telepathic conversations in this video that they posted. You get a kick out of it, because two of them had a conversation with a mantis alien.
Oh, that's up my alley. Yeah. Okay.
But you definitely get the sense from, they asked every alien that they spoke to, is your species a slave race to another? And the answers were always kind of complicated. And some said yes, some said not from our perspective, but you might kind of see it that way. And another sort of said it's complicated. It's like and kind of painted a picture of a network of organizations connected in all sorts of different ways with different levels of power over others. And the remote viewer said it's the best analogy he could come up with was corporations, that it seemed it was like corporations. And so anyways, it's like when I got that picture, and so it's, and some of them, they were like, they weren't upset. They kind of asked them, are you trying to free yourself from whatever level of enslavement you are? And some of them said yes, some of them said no. And it was, and so it just made me realize that we on Earth, even though we're in the middle of this mess of a powerful non-human intelligence, being a human on Earth might be one of the most free positions you can be on in the universe. And that's kind
so
of
interesting. You know, the whole idea of slavery is a hard one, because I mean, take for example, let's look at a trucker, right? Somebody who drives across the country, and let's say he loves his job and he gets to see the world and go every place. And is that slavery? You know, I don't, he's working for massive corporations or what have you, but he does it with pleasure. Is that slavery?
It's not, you know? It's not slavery if you can, if your job is optional, if your job is a job you cannot quit. Is not slavery, but you can be abused by that power structure and you're trapped. Now that, of course, being trapped, it might be, you know, that's kind of the nature of life. You might be trapping yourself. You're making yourself, you know, feel oppressed because you are believing you cannot quit because you don't want to lose the job. You don't want to lose the income. You don't want to have to start over. But if you can't even quit, there is no option to quit, or quitting basically means you have to become homeless, or I mean, if quitting means you die, then it's qualifies as slavery. You know? If quitting means you get imprisoned, it's definitely going to be, or beaten. If your boss is allowed to beat you physically.
I agree.
I say that's slavery. They're allowed to emotionally abuse you, and they know you are trapped, and they know they can emotionally abuse you, I say that's on the realm of, that's on the spectrum of slavery.
Yeah, I would say that's slavery. Being abused, I think, is slavery. But I think, you know, as I mentioned, I think I told you the other day, in Hinduism, they have that class system. I don't know if they have it so much anymore, but it used to be that if you were born into a situation where you had to be a street sweeper, then your whole life was supposed to be, maybe still is, about how to do that perfectly and with, you know, attention and mindfulness and bring beauty to it, you know, try to make it lovely, even as a street sweeper. So you just take what's given to you, and then you do the best you can. But I don't think abuse was part of that picture. I think abuse is a big part of that slavery piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Taking advantage. Well, yeah.
Well, I think I could so easily see it being tied to your spaceship. I mean, if it seemed like a lot of these aliens they were talking to were on giant motherships of some sort. And if you're on a, let's say you're living on an aircraft carrier or a giant boat, and they're like, well, you either have to do some work on this boat as be part of the crew, or we are going to drop you off on an, we're going to kick you off. I mean,
deserted island. Yeah.
So like if you're on a spaceship and that's your home and you don't have a planet that you can go to live on, that's comfortable, or then you are trapped and you have to like take a job, and they're going to like, these are the, they might be like, you can, there's two jobs you can have on this ship, and those are the only ones you're qualified for. And it is, and if you have, and if your brain is not private, I mean, if they can get into your brain without your consent and manipulate what you see and feel, Well, I mean, again, that's I think in the realm of slavery, but
I agree. I think that kind of abuse, but if you were on a spaceship under those same conditions where you were constantly being reminded of how valuable you were and how, being respected and appreciated and supported to the point where you're feeling like this is wonderful, I don't think slavery. So really, I think it's what's coming down from the top. Is it force? Is it manipulation? Is it taking advantage? That would be slavery.
yeah. Well, I think you have to have choice. I mean, as long
Yeah.
if I mean, I could see myself being happy living on an amazing spaceship. If they were like, every day we need you to do 4 hours of work and we will give you options of the different jobs and you can learn new skills if you want to try to like do different jobs that are more interesting to you. As long as there's like options for personal growth and happiness and the and but you know, if it's 4 hours a day, that's what I think is like reasonable in a 24-hour day. But if they're like 12 hours a day of work, I'd be like, no, I'm
Right.
not interested.
Exactly.
I mean,
Yeah.
I would be like 8 hours. I'd be like, I'm not interested. I'd rather drop me on Earth. I will
I'll
make my way on Earth.
figure it out. Leave me
Yeah.
alone. Yeah. Yeah, it's big. Yeah, so I do think it's all about our the energy around us, how it's manipulating us or controlling us or influencing us. Let's put it that way. It's
Yeah.
just going to influence us, and then we have to find the best way of managing. Anything else about your class? This has been a good one.
No, it just seems like it's a great academic intellectual training ground to try to like help change the way humanity thinks and sees itself, to try to recreate our society, which is kind of like aligned with my personal mission, you know, of
Me too. Me
what I
too.
want
We
to
got to
do.
do something.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I guess it just means we're trying to create on Earth the most perfect society. And it might be, maybe we can create something here that all aliens in the universe will be like, that's one of the best places to live. It's like structured in the most fair, elegant way.
And I would say that we are being guided in that direction, with higher, non-human intelligence. They're willing to guide us in that direction if we can open up to it. Right now, so many people are so entrenched in anxiety and fear. So obviously, this is where meditation comes in, because when you can calm the mind and be present and open to anything, basically it's involving more and more just plain old letting go of fear of death, because we're coming down to the bottom line where everybody's getting so anxious and so fearful, and we have to let that go. We just got to let it go of everything, let it all go. And from that point, we can find motivation to move in the right direction with this inner guidance that's coming through for anybody who has a quiet mind. It's like this, as we started out the show, nothing in the world, what was it go? Oh, it says, nothing is worse than to have a running leakage of spirit consciousness, because that we're just looking in the wrong direction when we do that. So if we can turn inward and become silent, we can find more guidance and direction from a peaceful mind.
Love it.
Yeah, it's important. Do we have
Well,
time for a short 5-minute
absolutely.
meditation? Let's go ahead and do that. So this whole thing is about releasing fear, releasing anxiety, releasing all that stress and worry and all the buzz of thoughts that go swirling through our minds. So let's, for right now, listen to the bell. You can feel the vibration on your eardrum. Now let's bring our attention to the weight of our body pressing against the cushion or the chair, floor. That sense of pressure, feeling your feet on the floor. Feeling your hands in your lap. Feeling your head balancing on your neck. The muscles tightening and contracting. We'll begin to feel our body expanding and contracting with each breath. When our mind comes into the present moment of what's actually happening through our senses, the mind begins to calm down. Things begin to open up, relax. Feel that breath breathing in and breathing out. When our mind becomes too agitated, we begin to shut down and become more reactive. When our mind is calm and open, expanded, there's more choice. We can respond rather than react. Most Eastern teachers will tell you, when your mind is at rest, everything that happens is perfect. It just unfolds naturally. A squirrel doesn't have to go to school to figure out how to survive a winter. It just knows. It's being guided. Just like our body knows that it has to breathe, just like our liver knows that it has to do thousands of enzymatic exchanges every second. Our stomach knows how to digest and assimilate nutrients. We don't really know how to do any of this. Who's running the show? We're just watching. So when your mind feels chaotic and pressured and stressed, squeezed with fear, just come back to the breath. Feel your feet on the floor, or better yet, feel your feet in the grass. we don't have to know. And we can just relish the mystery with curiosity. And from this place of open, soft being, we can be more receptive to higher guidance. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Dora.
Have a great week.
You too.